Okay, think about those moments where, just the right amount of pressure makes all the difference. Like that precise puff that inflates something just right, or maybe the force keeping a system running smoothly. Pressure, it's fundamental, right?
No.
But we often don't even think about it.
We really don't. It's everywhere.
So today, we're taking that idea, that force, and diving deep into how industry measures it with, well, incredible precision. We're talking about pressure transmitters.
That's right. And you, our listener, you've given us some really great material on these stuff, focusing on how they're built, how they're used across different industries.
Yeah, the documents really get into the nitty-gritty, don't they? The sensors inside, how they connect them up in the real world.
Exactly. So our mission today, let's unpack this tech, understand the core ideas, why they're so vital, but maybe without getting totally lost in the super technical weeds.
Sounds good. And guiding you through this, you're hearing two voices. Mine, I'm bringing the enthusiasm, trying to make it all relatable.
And mine offering hopefully some insightful analysis and connecting the dots to the bigger picture. So what's the roadmap for today? Where are we headed?
Okay, so first up, what's their main job? How do they turn pressure into something machines understand?
Right, the translation part.
Then we'll peek inside the sensor itself. Focus on that common type, the capacitive one. It's pretty neat stuff.
The capacitive magic.
Then the digital brains, the modern electronics doing the processing, and finally the physical side. How they're built, housed, hooked up, and crucially, what all those specs on the data sheets actually mean.
Okay, let's get into it. So fundamentally, the core job, what is it?
It's actually pretty straightforward at its heart. A pressure transmitter takes physical pressure from, say, a pipe or a tank in a plant,
Okay.
and it converts that pressure into an electrical signal.
An electrical signal that computers can read. Exactly. That signal goes into automation systems, controllers, data loggers, whatever. And those systems use the information to monitor things, control the process. It's that bridge from the physical world to actionable data.
Gotcha. And the materials mention different types of pressure they measure: absolute, gauge, overdruck, and differential, verschildruck.
Yes, precisely. Absolute pressure is measured against a perfect vacuum, zero pressure.
Okay.
Gauge pressure, or overdruck, that's probably the one we bump into most.
Yeah.
Like a tire gauge, it measures pressure relative to the atmosphere around us.
Right. Makes sense.
And then differential pressure, verschildruck, measures the difference in pressure between two specific points.
Ah, okay. Like if you wanted to see how much pressure is lost across a filter or something.
Exactly that. Perfect example. Knowing which type you need is, well, fundamental for picking the right transmitter.
Okay. So how do they actually sense it? You mentioned capacitive sensors are common. That sounds interesting.
It really is. The design's quite clever. The materials highlighted this capacitive type.
So what's inside? What's the magic?
Okay, picture a tiny sealed cell. On the outside, you've got these thin membranes, right? They touch the process fluid or gas.
Exposed to the pressure.
Exactly. Behind those, there's a little bit of silicone oil. When pressure pushes on the outer membranes, the oil transmits that force inwards to the real heart of it all, a central tiny diaphragm that can move.
A movable diaphragm, and that's between.
It's sandwiched between two fixed capacitor plates.
Okay, I think I'm visualizing that. So the movement translates to a reading how.
Well, because it's all symmetrical, where that central diaphragm sits depends directly on the difference in pressure between the two outer sides.
Ah, so for differential pressure.
Right. If pressure is higher on one side, the diaphragm moves just a tiny bit towards the lower pressure side. And that movement changes the capacitance, basically, the ability to store charge between the diaphragm and those fixed plates.
And the electronics measure that change in capacitance.
Precisely. By measuring that tiny change very accurately, the transmitter figures out the pressure difference.
That is really clever. And I remember reading that only a few companies actually make these core sensor bits.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point from the sources. You might buy a transmitter from brand X or brand Y, but the actual tiny sensor cell inside, that capacitive element, often comes from just a handful of really specialized manufacturers.
So lots of different badges, but maybe the same engine underneath
First,
sometimes.
yeah. It highlights where the real specialized expertise lies and maybe a bit of a bottleneck in the supply chain, too.
Interesting. Okay, so we've gone from pressure to oil moving a diaphragm to a change in capacitance. What happens next electronically? How does that become, useful digital info?
Right, because modern transmitters are all about digital electronics. The block diagram in the source helps here, that analog signal from the sensor. First step is an analog to digital converter. an AD converter.
Okay, turning the analog wiggle into digital ones and zeros.
Exactly. Now you've got digital data. And this is where the built-in microprocessor earns its keep.
The brain.
It does some really important stuff. For instance, the raw signal from the sensor might not be perfectly linear with pressure. It might curve a bit.
Ah, so double the pressure doesn't exactly double the signal?
Sometimes, yeah. So the microprocessor uses math, algorithms stored in its memory, to linearize that signal, make it straight, accurate. It can also do other calculations, like square roots, which you often need for flow measurements derived from pressure.
That digital processing sounds way more powerful than just analog circuits.
Oh, absolutely. Much more accuracy, much more flexibility.
And the sources said it might use other sensor data, too, like temperature.
Yes, good point. Many transmitters have a built-in temperature sensor right there near the pressure sensor. The microprocessor uses that temperature reading to compensate.
Compensate for what?
For any effects temperature might have on the pressure sensor itself. Materials expand and contract, right? This compensation keeps the pressure reading accurate, even if the process temperature changes.
Smart. So after all that digital magic, processing compensation, then what?
Then, usually, it converts that processed digital signal back into an analog output. Most commonly, that standard 4 to 20 milliamp current loop that uses a digital to analog, or DA, converter.
Ah, the 4 to 20 milliamp signal. You see that everywhere in industry. But the docs also mentioned HART protocol. What's that adding on top?
HART Highway Addressable Remote Transducer. It's a really clever hybrid system. It basically piggybacks a digital signal onto the standard 4 to 20 mA analog current loop.
Without messing up the analog signal.
Without messing it up. It uses different frequencies. So you get your standard analog pressure reading, but you also get two-way digital communication.
Like a secret digital channel.
Pretty much. It means you can talk to the transmitter remotely, configure it, change settings, read diagnostic information, maybe even get a secondary reading like the sensor temperature, all over the same two wires.
Okay, that's really useful. The sources showed those handheld programmer things too.
Yep, figure 3 and 4. Technicians can use those locally. Or you can often configure and get that HART data through the main control system itself.
And some transmitters just skip the analog altogether now, go straight digital.
Increasingly, yes. You have transmitters that output directly onto digital field buses like Profibus or Foundation Field Bus. In that case, you don't need the DA converter step. It's all digital end-to-end.
Makes sense. Streamlines things. Now, safety came up too. Fail-safe. SACE IR ratings, intrinsic safety. Sounds critical, especially in risky places.
Absolutely critical. Fail-safe often means designing the electronics with redundancy, so if something fails, the transmitter output goes to a known safe state, either high or low current, instead of giving a wrong reading.
Okay, prevents dangerous situations.
Right, and SI, safety integrity level, that's a formal classification based on international standards, like IEC 61508. It tells you how much risk reduction a safety device like a transmitter provides. For critical safety loops, you need SI-rated components.
An intrinsic safety act.
That's specifically for explosive atmospheres. An intrinsically safe 4 to 20 milli output limits the electrical energy voltage and current to levels so low they can't possibly ignite flammable gas or dust, even if there's a short circuit or fault.
Wow. Okay. So a lot going on inside these things electronically. What about the outside, the physical box? How are they built to survive tough industrial spots?
Yeah, they need to be tough. Mechanically, they usually separate the sensitive electronics from the sensor part, which connects to the process. It's all put in a rugged, waterproof housing.
Waterproof-like, IP rated.
Exactly. Usually IP 55 or higher. That means protected against dust and water jets. And for those explosive areas, you might see XDET or flame-proof housings. They're built strong enough to contain an internal explosion without letting it ignite the outside atmosphere.
Robust. And some have little screens on them, too.
Yeah, an integrated display. Figure 5 shows the typical layout electronics housing, display maybe, then the sensor base with the process connections.
And for differential pressure, you mentioned manifolds or crane and block. What are they exactly?
Right, DP transmitters have two connections, high and low pressure. They often mount onto a manifold, which is basically a block with valves built in. It sits between the process pipes and the transmitter.
Like an adapter with valves?
Kind of, yeah. Figures 7 and 8 show examples. A simple two-valve manifold for gauge pressure lets you block the pressure off. But for differential, you usually see three-valve, or more commonly, five-valve manifolds.
Five valves? Why so many?
Well, you have two isolate valves, one for the high pressure side, one for the low. They shut off the process. Then you have an equalizing valve between the high and low sides. You open that to check the transmitter's zero point. And often two vent or bleed valves to safely release trapped pressure or fluid before you remove the transmitter.
Ah, okay. Makes maintenance much safer and easier, I bet.
Definitely. You can isolate, vent, and remove the transmitter without shutting down the whole line.
Right. Now, the materials also had these detailed drawings called hookups, figures 9 to 14. What are they showing?
Hookups are the installation blueprints, essentially. They show exactly how to connect the transmitter and its manifold to the process piping for a specific measurement.
So, like, the nuts and bolts of installation.
Pretty much. Figure 9, for example, shows a standard setup for measuring water flow with an orifice plate. The transmitter measures the pressure drop across that plate. These drawings ensure everyone installs it the same way, which is crucial for getting the measurement right.
And figure 10 was similar, but for steam flow. It added those condensate pots. Why are they needed for steam?
Ah, steam is tricky because it's hot. You don't want 200-degree steam hitting your sensitive transmitter sensor.
Right, that sounds bad.
So the condensate pots are installed in the impulse lines, the small pipes connecting the process to the transmitter. They create a space where the steam cools and condenses into water.
So the transmitter only ever sees water.
Exactly. It protects the transmitter from heat. Plus, it ensures the impulse lines stay completely full of liquid water, which gives a stable, accurate pressure transfer. You wouldn't usually need them for, say, cold water flow.
Makes total sense. Protect the instrument, keep the lines full. Figure 11 was level measurement, looked like in a steam drum or something. Also used a pot.
Yes, similar principle. For measuring the level in a vessel with steam, like a boiler drum, you often need a constant reference leg of water. The condensate pot on the high pressure connection helps create that reliable column of water. The transmitter measures the difference between the pressure from that water column and the pressure in the steam space above the water level.
And the height difference matters too, right? Where you mount it?
Absolutely. The hookup diagram usually considers the mounting position because the weight of that water column affects the zero point of the measurement. You have to calibrate that out. So physical setup directly impacts the calibration.
Got it. Figure 12, steam pressure measurement, also showed a pot, and it mentioned sloping the lines, 1.10 or 1.20.
Yeah, the slope is important, especially with steam or potentially wet gases.
Mm.
Sloping the impulse line slightly downwards toward the process connection ensures that any condensate that forms can drain back properly.
Prevents waterlogging in the lines.
Exactly, or blockages. Keeps the measurement path clear. And again, the note says for just measuring water pressure, you probably don't need the pot.
Okay. Now, figure 13 was interesting steam pressure again, but with an old school manometer. It had that curly pipe, the pigtail or siphon. Same job as a condensate pot.
Pretty much the same idea, yeah. Just a simpler, older method. The loop in the pigtail traps, steam, allows it to condense, forming a water seal that protects the manometer's mechanism from live steam. It's the low-tech equivalent of a condensate pot for that type of instrument.
Cool. And finally, figure 14, air or gas pressure. It said mount the transmitter above the pipe and slope the lines up. Why the opposite?
For gases, especially if they might contain some moisture or condensate, mounting the transmitter above the tap point and sloping the lines up towards the transmitter ensures that any liquid droplets tend to drain back down into the main process line.
Ah, so liquid doesn't get trapped up near the transmitter.
Right, prevents incorrect readings caused by liquid buildup in the sensing lines. It also noted the impulse lines can often be smaller for gas service.
Yeah.
So yeah, the fluid dictates the best installation practice.
Wow. So it's really not just plug and play. The hookup, the installation details are super critical depending on what you're measuring.
Absolutely crucial. Get the installation wrong, and even the best transmitter won't give you an accurate reading. It can also be a safety issue. Okay, so we know how they work and how they're installed. What about choosing one? The specs.
Yes. The data sheets. This is where it gets dense, right? Terms like measuring range, span, rangeability, accuracy. Let's unpack those. What's the basic measuring range?
Okay, measuring range, sometimes just called range or meet jibbied, that's simply the lowest and highest pressure the transmitter is designed to measure. Defined by the lower range limit, LRL, and upper range limit, URL.
So the absolute floor and ceiling it can handle.
Kind of, yeah. The designed operating window.
And measuring span, meet brigade, is that just the difference between the URL and LRL?
Exactly. Span is the difference between the upper and lower calibrated points. So it's the pressure difference that corresponds to the full output swing, like from 4MA to 20MA.
Okay, the width of your actual measurement window.
Precisely.
Then there's rangeability, meet breed overheading. That sounds like flexibility.
It is. Rangeability tells you how much you can adjust that span. It's the ratio of the maximum possible span, URL minus LRL, to the minimum span the transmitter can be accurately calibrated for.
So a high number is good, like the 15.1 example?
Yeah, a high rangeability like 15.1 or even 100.1 on modern transmitters means one device can be configured for many different pressure ranges. Very flexible. If its max band is 100 bar, 100.1 rangeability means you could potentially set it up for a tiny one bar span accurately.
Wow, that's versatile.
Yeah.
Okay, accuracy, not courage eyed, obviously key. How is that defined?
Accuracy tells you how close the transmitter's output is to the actual true pressure. It's usually given as a percentage of the calibrated span. Importantly, this figure usually includes errors from things like linearity.
How straight the output line is.
And hysteresis, which is the difference in reading depending on whether the pressure is going up or coming down. It's a combined measure of how trustworthy the reading is.
Got it. And supply voltage, mostly 24 volts DC on two wires.
Yeah, that's the most common for 420 MA transmitters. It's called a two-wire loop-powered system. The same two wires deliver the 24V DC power and carry the 420 MA signal back. It simplifies wiring. And 24V DC is a standard, safe-ish voltage in industrial controls.
Okay, then zero shift, zero elevation, zero suppression. This isn't about accuracy at zero, is it? It's about moving the whole scale.
Exactly right. Sometimes the pressure range you want to measure doesn't start at zero gauge pressure. Maybe you want to measure from 10 bar to 20 bar.
Mm-hmm.
Zero suppression or elevation allows you to shift the start point of your 420 MA output. So in that example, 10 bar might correspond to 4 MA and 20 bar to 20 MA. You've suppressed the zero. Modern transmitters let you adjust this zero point quite a lot within their overall range.
Flexible. What about minimum and maximum working pressure? Is that just damage limits?
It covers a couple of things. Minimum working pressure might be about the lowest absolute pressure it can handle. Maximum working pressure is usually the highest pressure it can see continuously without its calibration drifting permanently.
So you can maybe go higher briefly, but it might need recalibrating.
Potentially. And crucially, for DP transmitters, you also have specs for static pressure. The maximum pressure both sides can see simultaneously and over range pressure, how much you can exceed the differential span on one side without damage. These define the physical limits.
Right. Don't want to blow the sensor. Lastly, for specs, chemical seals. When are these absolutely necessary?
Chemical seals or diaphragm seals are basically protective barriers. You use them when the process fluid is really nasty, corrosive, super thick, extremely hot or cold, or likely to clog up the transmitter's small ports.
So it isolates the transmitter.
Yeah. A flexible diaphragm seal is exposed to the process, and it's connected, often by a fluid-filled capillary tube, to the transmitter. The pressure is transmitted through the fill fluid, but as the source notes, they add complexity, cost, and potential air sources. So you generally avoid them unless needed, like in standard water and steam.
Okay, makes sense. Use them when you have to protect the instrument from the process. Now, the last chunk was about certifications. CE marking, SIL, material certs. Why is this bureaucratic stuff important?
It might seem bureaucratic, but it's really about safety and assurance. The CE marking is fundamental in Europe. It means the manufacturer declares the transmitter meets essential requirements of relevant directives.
Like
EMC, electromagnetic compatibility, so it doesn't interfere with or get upset by other electrical gear. The low voltage directive for electrical safety. PED, the pressure equipment directive if it's above certain pressure volume thresholds, and ATEX for explosion safety if it's designed for hazardous areas. Often, a third-party notified body is involved in testing for CE marking.
So CE is a basic stamp of compliance for Europe. What other certs might you need?
Depends on the application. Material certificates, like EN1204 Type 3.1, trace the materials used, especially for parts touching the process, the wetted parts. Crucial if you need specific corrosion resistance, for example.
Verifying the metal is what they say it is.
Exactly. A calibration certificate proves its accuracy was checked against traceable standards. You might pay extra, depending on how many points you want checked. A hydrostatic pressure test certificate confirms it passed a pressure leak test. And that SIL certificate we mentioned earlier is vital if it's part of a safety system. Each certificate provides a specific piece of evidence about the transmitter's quality or suitability.
Right, building a case for using that specific transmitter in that specific application. And the final piece was the datasheet, figure 15. This sounds like the ordering document.
It absolutely is. The datasheet is where the engineer specifies everything needed. All the process details, fluid, pressure range, temperature, the environmental needs, IP rating, X classification, the required output, 420 MA, heart, field bus, the accuracy needed, and which of those certificates we just talked about are mandatory.
So you fill this out like a shopping list.
Pretty much. A very detailed shopping list. You fill it in completely, send it to potential suppliers, and they quote, based on providing a transmitter that meets every single requirement on that sheet, getting the data sheet right is critical to getting the right instrument.
Okay, got it. It's the blueprint for the specific transmitter you need.
Couldn't have said it better. It bridges the gap between the process need and the manufactured product.
Well, that was quite the journey. We've gone from the basic idea of pressure to the intricate workings of capacitive sensors, the digital brains, the tough exteriors, the specific hookups, and finally, how you actually spec one out.
It's a lot, isn't it? But it really shows the blend of, you know, precision mechanics and pretty sophisticated electronics needed for what seems like a simple measurement.
Yeah, and it makes you realize these devices, these pressure transmitters, are kind of the unsung heroes in so much of modern industry. They're constantly feeding information into control systems.
Absolutely. They're fundamental sensors.
Yeah.
Translating that physical pressure into the language of automation. It underpins efficiency, safety, quality control, and countless processes that, yeah, ultimately affect our daily lives in ways we probably don't even realize.
So as you, our listener, think about all this, here's maybe a final thought to chew on. Industries are getting more automated, more data hungry all the time, right?
Definitely.
So how might the demands on pressure measurement change? Will we need even more accuracy, even better reliability? How will they integrate with, I don't know, even smarter AI-driven systems in the future? What happens to this fundamental measurement next? Something to ponder until our next deep dive.